Hi there. This is Lori Houston with News of the Heart with David Watson, who is my co-host, who is a life strategist as well as a channeler. And we're going to be talking about free will.
Free will.
Free will. I like that.
Yeah.
So free will, let's get your initial ideas on free will.
My take on free will.
Yes.
Well, I think free will is where an individual has the opportunity and the right to decide what they're going to do with their lives, what direction they're going to head in, what choices they have as far as how they're going to feel and how they would like to have the world around them be for them. So I think free will, in my opinion, would be closer to understanding the nature of perspective. So that would be understanding our perspective as an individual to be able to co-create in our own life. So,
okay. So, yeah. Thinking of free will versus destiny, or that everything's predetermined.
Well, I guess some people believe that.
Yes,
and that's their right to free will, and so they, within those parameters, they have a degree of free will in which they can do certain things, but they have to keep coming back to a central or core aspect of their own life, you know. And which is what they have to live out, some kind of a drama of some sort, you know, passion drama or something like that, you know. So it's that kind of thing that I wanted to explore with this particular idea, you know, the idea of the fact that we do have free will. It's part of our right to be here on this planet. And that each one of us can develop it in our own way, so it's unique to ourselves, so it's unique to who we are and the things that we want in life. Because so many of us feel like we live these limited or controlled or managed lives that we have little or no say in. You know, I have to work, I have to feed the kids, I have to look after the kids, oh my God, I have to pay the bills, I have to do this. Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, have to is a strong word, you know, it's a way of putting things in a kind of victim role, because the moment we feel we have to do things, we begin to feel victimized by the things we have to do. And those things, which become just day-to-day necessities to live in the society we live in, suddenly become great weights that we carry on our shoulders. And we don't feel like we have free will within those premise, you know, and those parameters. So what do we do with that? Where do we go with that? As far as how we perceive ourselves and how we feel a certain degree of happiness. Because I believe that happiness is what a lot of people believe that free will really is tantamount to. If I could only be free, then I'd be happy. If I could only have my freedom, if I could only do what I want to do, if only the world went and operated the way I would like it to, then I would be happy. But unfortunately, I don't have free will. Or I don't have the ability to change it, or I don't have the right to change it. Well, not everybody feels like that. There's lots of people that many of us admire, public figures, whether they're in the arts, or whether they're in politics, or whether they're in business. They rise to the top, and they do things, and they acquire things, and they do things that appear to be almost counterindicative to the world that the rest of us live in, you know, because they take chances, they go places, they do things, and they exercise their free will. And I guess kind of what I'm saying is they're great role models for all of us. Instead of saying, oh, I could never do that, or God, I don't know how you do that, look at them and say, how do you do that? How did you get there? What did you think? What was going on in your mind when that happened? And open up our inner inquirer and discover perhaps exactly what those people are doing to make their lives apparently to us more worthwhile. Of course, we don't speak to those folks and we don't discover particularly how they feel about life because they are doing that, because when we begin to examine it a little closer, in certain instances, some of these people happen to be, I don't know, sociopathic, you know, in the way that they behave. They isolate themselves, they take the people around them and they use them as if they were pawns, etc., etc. So we don't want to do that, you know. The average person doesn't want to do that anyway, I would suggest. But at the same time, it is, in many people's minds, a means to an end, you know. So we can question that, and then we start getting involved in morals and values and that kind of thing. as far as free will is concerned. But my take on free will, all told, is not just out in the business world, not out in the world of success, where we gauge ourselves by other people's opinions and other people's perspectives, but rather inside of ourselves, where we have an opportunity to really be free, where we have an opportunity to discover our inner being and our inner knowingness. And that comes through, a variety of different ways and techniques, you know?
Right.
And you and I have discussed many of those in the past, as far as going into different meditative processes, going into guided meditations, going into guided visualizations, contemplation, just being quiet, you know, sitting quietly by a water in nature on a nice summer day is a very good way to chill out and begin to pull back our own sense of who we are. And that, to me, is the real essence of what freedom is about, you know, and what inner freedom is about. And
so it comes to, I guess, a few different things. I mean, free will is about choices, and the Willows talk about the purpose of our lives is to have an emotional experience and to make choices.
That's right, yeah.
So for those, I guess, for those who don't believe we have free will or can't, you know, bring in that concept. I mean, sometimes there are things that happen, and I think things happen. And I think from those things that happen, it's our free will to choose how we respond to what happens versus, you know, seeing everything as a victim or seeing, you know, things. Well, we often put a judgment on it and say, well, all these bad things always happen to me. Or, you know, we come up with some sort of, you know, mass judgment that we get caught in. And when we get caught in it, then it's difficult to see free will. And then the other part of that, I would say, is that it's this bit about control, that we're always trying to control everything. And really, we don't control anything other than the possibility of our choices.
Again, one of our favorite topics, you know. That's all tied in with free will in my estimation, but it's a matter of individuals deciding, each one of us deciding, that A, we're going to not try and control anything, and that we're going to take charge of our lives, that we're going to live in a more productive and a more resourceful state. And the difference between being in charge and being in control is quite simple. You know, being in control means that we resist and push against everything and try to make things and shape them our way. And being in charge means we flow with everything and we go with the energy that's around us and we surrender to the energy around us, which is the only way we can really move forward in life. And that's one of the great secrets of free will and living in general. And understanding that once we get into that state, we can move forward with whatever's around us and use our resourceful mind to live and to shape and to act and behave in the moment. Because it all has to do with the way that we perceive change as well.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Well, most of us hate change. You know, that's why we don't feel we have any free will. You know, we're only going to live so long. It's only going to be this way. We live this limited existence. We can't have everything we want, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, those are all very valid arguments if we take it strictly from an ego-based perspective. You know, oh, my ego, I can't do it. I can't survive. And we base our entire thought process on the social order that we live in, you know, on our culture, our society. And I know we're shaped by our culture, and I know we're shaped by our society, but I'll ask anybody out there to ask themselves as to, are they defined by it? You know, I don't think that we take that into consideration enough. Yeah, we are a product of our society. We are shaped by it, but are we defined by it? Because the definition is where our individuality comes from and where free will comes from.
Right.
And self-definition as to how we perceive ourselves. And mostly, when we begin to look at that, you know, just to do a little bit of self-analysis and to get into that space, I would suggest that, you know, it's very easy to turn around and make a list, you know, of top tens, you know, the top 10 things I shouldn't do, the top 10 things I should do in any part of my life, whether it's in a relationship, in business, just in society, in education, whatever. Just make your top 10s and then go back and ask yourself where you learned all that stuff. Go to each one of those shoulds and shouldn'ts, as I should do this, and ask where you learned it from, who you learned it from, where it came from. And chances are you're going to find out that, well, you know, it was something that was basically imprinted upon you earlier in life when you weren't in a position to really question it, but you needed to accept it in order to be accepted by your family or your peers or your educational system or your particular religion or faith. So, you know, it's those things that we just have unquestioned. And we create these presuppositions in our lives about what is and what isn't true. And I don't see anything wrong with presuppositions personally, because it's healthy to have them, because with them we were able to cope with life more effectively. But if those presuppositions are involved with control issues, you know, I have to keep a stiff upper lip. I can't show my emotions. I have to be tough. I have to, you know, kill everyone around me in business and come out to the top, you know, and
right.
with stocks in both hands, you know. And I mean, okay, you know, like, all right. But where'd you learn that from? Who'd you learn that from? Where'd you learn it? Did you learn it in a book? Did you learn it on TV? Did you learn it from your dad? Where did you learn it? Because it's not a natural human instinct as far as I'm concerned. So it's things like that that we can begin to look at and say, well, you know, our preconceptions, you know, the way that we view life is often one-sided, because we don't have anything to compare it to inside of ourselves, because that's our perspective, that's the way we see things, and that's the way we were raised to see life. And as a result, we actually create our own little box that we live within
right.
as a result of that.
Right.
So, getting out of it.
Yeah, understanding what the box is that we've created.
Well, I hope I painted a bit of a picture there.
Yes.
But you know, and getting out of it, you know, it's not hopeless or helpless. In fact, we have to come to the conclusion of, A, we're in the box before we can get out of the box. You know, and you know, sometimes we even have to realize we are the box, you know. It's
right.
Like, you know, the old joke, there was, you know, the two psychiatrists on either side of a lake, and one of them shouts across to the other one, "How do I get to the other side?" And the other one shouts back, "You're already on the other side," you know. Then there were the two Zen monks, one on either side of the lake, and one shouts to the other, "How do I get to the other side of the lake?" And the other one says, "You are the lake," you know.
Right.
So once we realize that we are the lake, we are the box, we are our lives, that's a big step in beginning to, you know, take responsibility for who we are and the decisions we make and our emotional bodies as well. You know? So I think that's a biggie as well.
Mm-hmm.
So my feelings around that are taking charge in life, understanding our own path, understanding the basis of who we are and what we do with that alone. And how we interact with other people, how we impact in the world around us. Not many of us think too much about that. Mostly we think about how the world impacts on us.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
So we begin to live a life from the outside in, and that's the way we live our lives for our whole life. And then there's a time when we get to the point, I hope, you know, at least like many of my friends have, as I have as well, we begin to say, well, how am I impacting on the world around me? What am I doing? Is it positive? Is it negative? You know, are my thoughts and words giving people good feelings? Are they making them feel crummy? You know, how am I feeling? You know, as a result of what I'm saying, because every time we say something, anybody who studies this type of perspective in life understands that every time we say something negative or poorly about somebody else or something else, we're saying it to ourselves at the same time. So that then creates another box that we, you know, manage to construct around ourselves as well. So there's a lot to be said about free will, kid. You know, I and that's the way I kind of perceive that particular way of understanding the world around us, I guess.
Right. Okay, well, we do have to go to break, so why don't we go to break now? You are listening to News for the Heart, and we are getting to the heart of what matters, and it's all around free will. Join us. We'll be back. And welcome back. You are listening to News for the Heart, and we have with us David Watson. David will be with us every second Monday of the month. And he is a life strategist. He also is a channeler. I'm sure at some point we will be channeling some information from the Willows. If you want more information about David, you can go to his website, askthewillows.com. So A-S-K, askthewillows.com. And we're talking about free will. So, I mean, obviously there's the, you know, how do we realize free will? And really, let's like really delve into that. But also, you mentioned on break the bit about duality. Let's talk about duality.
Well, I look at the world we live in, and being a bit of a, you know, I guess you'd call me a reformed Taoist. You know, I studied that ever since I was 19 years old, and really love the philosophy. But it blends very much with our understanding of a Buddhist belief about the world that we live in. Everything is a matter of opposites, you know, male, female, up, down, positive, negative. We call that the world of duality, you know. And good, bad, you name it. Everything that exists, there seems to be a mirror image of it reflected on this plane. And so using that as a thought process, I think we could kind of look at the word duality, and we could look at the word free will and say, well, just using the term free will indicates that there isn't free will. It has to by its very definition. Free will is defined by having will that is free from whatever it was not free from. So I guess pretzel logic in one sense, but not such pretzel logic, opens up a different page into a different way to perceive what we are and how we can indeed perceive free will. Because if we understand that we live in a place where there isn't a dual way of looking at it, where we could say, well, there's free will, there's not free will, therefore, if mind isn't free, it would strive to be free, which is what most of our literature and our philosophies are based on, it seems, you know. But, you know, further to that, I think if we stepped outside of that and said, well, you know what, there's just will. It's neither free nor not free. It's our way of perceiving it. Because perception is really what begins to create duality for ourselves, you know. If something's good, then it had to be bad before it could be good, or it had to be bad to recognize good, or something like that. But in my books, I think if something feels good, it feels good all the time, and there's, you know, taking that philosophy of no pain to another level, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think looking at the term free will and just eliminating it and beginning to look at the process of willpower itself and what will is. Willingness to have will means to do something, to desire something, to want something, to will it. Also means to make it happen, to will it to happen. So, you know, if we begin to look at it from that perspective, perhaps we can begin to get away from the thought that we don't have free will, but that we all have the right to willpower, and it's what we do with it and our choices that are involved in making it happen. As you mentioned earlier from the readings that I do, my channel source, the Willows, indicate that we do indeed have two main things that we do in life. And one of them is we come here to have an emotional experience. The other thing we come is to make choices, as you mentioned earlier. And utilizing that kind of thinking process, one of the first choices we have to make is to how we're going to feel. And other choices that we make is to what we're going to believe, to be true or not to be true.
Right.
You know? And it is all absolutely due to the kind of impressions that we take throughout our life about how we interact with the world around us and what is imprinted upon us, the things we learn during our formative years.
Right.
So those are the kind of things that come into play with that. And once we realize that, we don't have to go back into the past and start thinking, well, I have to rework my child, my inner child. I have to find my inner child. I mean, I don't like to make fun of inner child because the inner child is a very powerful part of us, you know. But I do remember many years ago, I was at a weekend workshop, and there was one guy who went into the woods to find his inner child. He's running around going, hello, are you there? It was very funny. But I think he found his inner child eventually. But we have this test to externalize everything,
right,
you know, which is what my real point of that story is about. And that's the whole thing is that we put so much effort and energy into what's happening externally that we believe that everything that happens to us is a result of forces beyond our control.
Right.
And in one sense it is, because, you know, we're a bit like dust in the wind and all those other things that, you know, our society likes to consider us as. But beyond that, we are part of a larger energy, part of a larger I guess consciousness, if you want to call it that. And a lot of us talk about Earth consciousness or universal consciousness or God consciousness, you know, or Buddha consciousness. We can go on all day with that kind of thing, but it's an indication that we have an understanding and an interaction with the universe around us, and that if we are one with the universe around us, that consciousness is part of a larger consciousness. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to observe the larger consciousness or anything else through our own consciousness.
Right.
Sounds a bit convoluted, but it's actually a matter of determining our perspective in that way.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense?
Sure. That in the same,
I hope it makes sense for
in me. In the same concept of looking at will,
yeah.
You know, people can say divine will,
mm-hmm.
right? And they can say our will, and then they can say our ego's will.
Thy will be done.
It can get just as
mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think what it boils down to is choice.
Right.
And I prefer to use the word choice rather than will. You know,
yes.
So we can begin to say, free
like
choice.
That.
And all of our choices are free when we really begin to consider it and think about it from the way that we're coming at it right now and the things that we're sharing. Because it then gives us the sense that we see the world around us, we interact with it, we choose to act this way or behave that way.
Right.
We can take the things that have happened to us in the past, we can begin to build on them and create a new, more powerful way of interacting. And having a new and clearer vision of who we are and what we are and where we're going.
Right.
So I think out of this, we can turn around and look at will, change it to choice, and realize that really we can choose to do pretty much anything we choose to do once we understand the fact that we're really in charge of that information that's coming to us and that. And those circumstances, because, you know, I always use the example, you know, there's three people sitting in a room, a cat, and a mouse runs into the room between them, and everybody has a different reaction to the mouse.
Sure.
Except the cat who eats the mouse, right? But
or just plays with it.
Or plays with it, but, you know, mostly, you know, come on, we've all watched Tom and Jerry, come on. So, anyway, he never reads the damn mouse, so here we are. But all kidding aside, I think that gives us three people who have three different perceptions. One person is afraid of the mouse. The other person wants to cuddle it. The other person wants to shoo it out of the room or is glad the cat ate it, you know, because they hate mice. And if each person goes back in their own personal history, their unique behavior came from an experience in their life, perhaps something that happened to them personally or, more to the point, something that actually happened to somebody
else. It's our perceptions of things.
That's
like,
right.
People, like, I grew up in the country, so mice are not... I would have a more adverse reaction to a cockroach than I would a mouse. To me, mice are just a natural part of the earth. Not that a cockroach isn't, but there's a certain
I think they'll be the last creatures with those little feelers going
right.
there as the sun goes down for the last
but
time.
But there is a perception that's different
yeah.
of a cockroach, yeah. which means, you know, possible dirtiness or whatever, that it's not a cleanly house or
mm-hmm.
whatever. Where... You know, to me, that's not the case at all with mice. Not that every house or apartment or condo would have mice, but to me, again, it's a perception of based where you grew up.
That's
and,
right.
And how you treat certain
mm-hmm.
things. Okay, so that's one part of free will. I think the other bit about free will that, or choices is that we really need to look at... you know, how closely we see the choice. And we've talked about how we often don't see a
mm-hmm.
choice. But, I mean, the choice may not be to change the situation. The choice
mm-hmm.
may just be about how we perceive it, which is, again, what we were talking about with the mouse. It's our perceptions.
That's right. Just observation.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's I agree with that perfectly because... If we see something happening, it's up to us. Are we going to do something about it? Or are we just going to let it go by? And
right.
that's the thing, particularly with our emotional bodies, you know, and the consciousness that comes along with them, where our emotional body tells us that we're feeling a certain thing. It's up to us whether we grasp onto it and hold it,
right.
or else we just release it. I mean, if I threw a hot potato into your hands at a barbecue, you wouldn't hold it for too long. Just drop it, right?
No, I'd probably throw it back in.
Yeah, it's
but
probably,
yes.
once it cooled off a little bit.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I'll
no,
burn
no.
myself anyway.
Yeah,
well,
just,
we go.
You throw it, I would throw it back.
That's,
yeah,
that's
no,
right.
I wouldn't touch it
yeah,
very
okay.
much. Yeah.
Well, fair enough. But whatever the case may be, see, everybody has a different reaction.
This,
but
yeah.
the fact is that what we really do when we have that hot coal of emotion, something upsets us, or we feel sad or unhappy, or it just annoys us considerably. Instead of just looking at it and going, oh, that's what it's doing, and letting the emotion go, what we do is we reach out for the emotion and we like hold it to us, like, and burn a hole into ourselves, you know, doing that thing. And where does that take us? You know, it takes us to the wrong place, because once we hold the emotion like that, we're then trapped in the emotion and we keep playing it over and over again. We often talk about OCD, right, in the world today. Of course, you know, I think that's a natural inborn human behavior. You know?
Really?
Well, I think that's how we learn. It's how we learn. We do things over and over again. We have a constant repetition until it's in there, and then it's gone. So those of us who have more of that in ourselves, we can't let go. We have to keep looking at it. I mean, how many people have obsessive thoughts out there? I mean, we all have obsessive thoughts from time to time, you know, and obsessive feelings. But as we learn to let go of them, and letting go of them doesn't mean like dumping them or burying them. It means just letting go of them so that we're not holding on to them anymore and letting them float away, you know, because there's only one moment and it's right now. And whatever we choose to hold into our lives and feel and believe in that moment is true for us. So if we have an emotion or a belief or a sense of victimhood that we brought into ourselves, where we feel trapped, where we feel oppressed, where we feel like we're unable to make, you know, decisive decisions, or somebody else is in control and we feel hopeless or helpless, we get depressed. All of these things happen to us because we're thinking about something that happened, not something that's happening. We make it happen now, but we get trapped into this, and then we say, I don't feel free. Well, then why don't you think about letting go of that right now? Because it's your mind that's holding it there, nothing else. Mm. It's your consciousness that's deciding to obsess on it and to think about it and to ruminate on it and to make it important in your life in that moment. Whereas in actual fact, it's really hurting you. It's creating a lot of pain. So what are you doing holding on to it? That's a question that you can ask yourself and make a decision in that moment to say, well, you know, maybe I could try letting go of it for a couple of minutes anyway. Oh my God, that feels better. You know, and once we begin to do little things like that, take an experimental attitude and say, you know, hey, it's okay to let go of feeling bad or obsessive or those kind of things. It's okay to change my mind and keep the change. That's kind of a way of saying, hey, is that free will?
Right.
I call it choice. Right. I call it what we decide to choose, how we decide to feel. I personally like to feel good. I don't know about you, but I like to feel good all the time.
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
Actually, I know somebody who really likes drama her life. And she goes to great lengths to hold that drama until you can...
But
finally kind of knock her in the head.
And the reason, because it makes her feel good to not feel good. It allows her to be satisfying something that she needs within herself.
Sure.
That makes her somehow believe that it's the right thing for her to do. It's the right way for her to feel.
I think.
Would you think?
You know, it's a lot of it has to do with how we experience love, or how we think our definition of love is. Because I mean, with people who, usually people that are very dramatic, have had very dramatic parents, or very dramatic, mostly dramatic parents, and, you know, different cultures have more drama in their lives. And I think, you know, we see a certain definition of love as how we've sort of seen it in show up in their life, or do you know what I mean? Like their parents, how their parents treated them. And we had to believe that that was love, because we had to believe that our parents wanted the best for us, or that our parents were doing the best for us, or that our parents, you know, however that showed up. And I think that's where we kind of get caught up in how we then view life afterwards. Like whether it's, well, whether we're happy or not happy.
Well, that's where our beliefs are coming from. So
right.
So you're going back to looking at some of the root causes of some of the beliefs we hold, which, of course, you know, are based in early childhood upon love or not love, or having it given or not given, or used as some kind of a weapon.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know more than one person, of course, who had a very abusive childhood. Well, I mean, darn, you know, and they were abused by the parents. They were beaten, not sexually, but emotionally and physically. And the other children in the family were allowed to turn this kid into like a Cinderella figure, You know? Oh, yeah. And it happens in many families. It's very interesting. There's a scapegoat. The scapegoat. And usually, it's the one who's not the same as everybody else. You know? And in her case, one of my friends, it was because she was smarter than everybody else in the family. And she is. So as a result of that, she was ostracized and made to feel like she wasn't smart. So she spent her whole life trying to make herself feel like she was worthy of the love that wasn't being given to her. And when it was given out in little dollops, you know, like, well, there you go. But don't let it go to your head, you know.
Right.
It's that kind of an approach. And, of course, does that affect people? Yeah. Does that make them feel like they're trapped? Yeah. Does that make them feel like they don't have choices? Yeah. All of those things happen. You're very right with love because, you know, as another one of my friends who channels and my mentor, his channel source, says, that's the echo, love is the only answer, no matter the question.
Mm-hmm.
And when we understand that's the basis of it all, because that's why we come together on this plane. That's why things coalesce. That's why things are attracted. Love is attraction. Love is building. Love is growth. Love is creation. Love is all of those things and more. And when we experience it on an emotional level, it has depths that are bottomless within ourselves. You know, absolutely. It's to me it's the glue that holds everything together. It's why atoms are attracted to each other to create molecules, to create us, and to create the world that we see around us. It is love that pulls it together, because it's ultimately the universal base of attraction.
Right. And so therefore, everything that happens to us, and, you know, we usually see people as the problem, wherein, you know, if we were looking at it from their perspective, you know, they were doing something out of love. Now, whether it was how it was, you know, how it was contrived or how it played out or whatever, there was still some, you know, that's what everybody always wants.
Yeah.
Is to be loved and to show love or to give love. We just have very unconscious beliefs about what love is.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It is that, but then each one of us has a different definition of what love is in itself.
Yeah.
You know, that MASH McCann song from my ill-spent youth, Do You Love Me? And basically, it talks about what love means to different people, the song. To a little child, when it says to mother, do you love me? It means, will you protect me?
Right.
You know, and when a mother says to the child, I love you, it means I will always be there for you. You know, when a teenage girl asks her boyfriend, will you love me? Do you love me? It means, will you respect me? And when he says, I love you, it means, yeah, what are you doing tonight? You know, we have so many different definitions of it and
right.
so many different
right.
shades of it, you know? So,
yes.
You know, when we begin to look at the ultimate understanding of love, that's how it's defined again in this dimension. I have a model I like to use, and maybe at some future time I'll bring it along so I can show it on camera.
Yeah.
But essentially it's this. I believe that that we all come from original love. And we come onto this plane, and when we do, we interact from this original love, this energy that we are, whether you want to consider it reincarnated or singular or individual or whatever it is, it comes in and it joins with us in a physical way. In other words, the body and the spirit join together. And as a result, we become animated. When you bring original love in, anyone who's picked up a baby will tell you it feels like they're made out of like dark material or something, like they weigh a ton, you know, like made out of dwarf star material. They're so heavy and they're so little, but they're so solid. And that's love within them, because that's all they feel. It's like everything is trust and everything is love and everything around them. And then, of course, we start messing them up, you know. They cry and we don't know. Did they wet themselves? Did they want something to eat? Are they tired? You know, are they lonely? What are they, you know? And then we start breaking up that love. So what happens is when life starts affecting us, even as early as like one day on the planet, it starts fractionalizing. And because everything that we do in our lives is created out of love to protect us, okay, that's another, you know, preconceived
idea.
We'll get to that after break. But because of that, you know, each of the parts of us that are created, we create our entire emotional spectrum from that original love. So it's like light coming into a prism, which is our body. Bing, love comes in, bam, it comes out, and it comes out with everything from love, as we know it on this plane, to fear. and everything in between, anger and jealousy and hatred and joy and bliss, and all of those are part of original love. And that's the spectrum of emotions that we live within. And if any emotion we're feeling, even if we're feeling anger or hatred or disgust, if we follow it back to its origin, we'll find that it comes from love.
Right. All right. With that, we're going to go to our next break.
Well, it's a freeing thought.
There we go. I guess. And you're listening to News for the Heart. We have David Watson here. You can find out more about David if you go to his website, askthewillows.com. David's a life strategist as well as a channeler. And we will be right back. And welcome back. You are listening to News of the Heart. I have David Watson with me. I'm Lori Houston. You can find out more about me if you go to my website, intuitivesoul.com. And David's at askthewillows.com. We've been talking about free will. We kind of moved into the spectrum of love versus fear.
Yeah.
We started with love. I don't know that. And I think that that's really part of that choice that we get to make with regards to free will. So let's continue on that around, you know, the spectrum of what is love.
As to what emotions we choose to choose to believe and choose to live our lives with. Well, you know, life experience may tell us that, you know, life is kind of a poopy place to be sometimes, you know.
Yeah, well, things like I said, things happen.
Yeah.
Things
happen. It does too. But you know what? As I like to say, shift happens too.
Yes.
And shift is what happens when we have these experiences. If we don't have some indicator of what it's like to be in another space, then it's impossible for us to enter into the space we're in. Right. That's on this plane. That's with our emotions. Because we were talking on break about love and fear as the two polar opposites that actually predetermine how we're going to choose to live our lives.
Yeah.
You know, once we grasp onto one end or the other of that stick, unless we really think about it, we're going to hold on to that for our whole lives. So it does predetermine us. That's when we're not free, because we make ourselves not free, because we don't open ourselves to our love and that original energy that we are all constructed and part of. So, you know, I think many of us do live lives in fear. Fear of other people's opinions, fear of failure, fear of being, you know, shot in some places in the world, unfortunately. Fear of being ridiculed, fear of making a mistake, fear, 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 fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we've spoken of before, the acronym for fear, of course, is false evidence appearing real. In other words, things that we create in our own lives. False evidence, anything we're really afraid of, is something we're projecting into the future, you know, and then bringing that back into the present moment. So we become very anxious about it.
Right.
You know, so we know that. And we get depressed when we focus on the past, right?
Yes.
And we get anxious when we focus on the future. And when we combine the two in the present moment, which is the only moment we can be alive, boy, it really messes us up, you know. How are you feeling? I'm anxious. I'm depressed. You know, oh, good Lord, you know, when are you going to come back into the moment? But that's where the true freedom comes, in the moment.
Right.
And with our own understanding of who we are in any given moment, and understanding that moment is evolving. It's always evolving, because that's the whole idea of change. The moment changes, it never stays the same. And that evolution that occurs within it is up to us to either grasp onto it or become locked in a conventional way of thinking and become the prisoner of our own emotional and mental gravity.
Right.
That's my artsy way of putting it, I guess, but it's true. It is what happens to us. So if we really want to look at being free, if we really want to look at all of that, first of all, we don't think about what freedom is or isn't. We can look into experiencing a state of love within ourselves and a way of expressing that love in the world around us by treating the things around us with love. And it was something that a friend of mine recently introduced me to, which is the thought of benevolence. You know, we've talked about that in the past as well. And to look at life in a loving and benevolent way. You know, if we ask for the most benevolent outcome in everything that we do, my golly, you know, think about the outcome. You know, because you're asking for the best for everybody. And people say, oh, I don't know if that's possible. And the answer to that is, how do you know it's not? You know, so because out of fear, of course, getting back to the fear process, comes doubt, comes uncertainty. Comes all of those hairy, thorny, itchy, scratchy emotional parts to ourselves, which do begin to control our thinking process and stop us from taking charge of our lives and really deciding how we want to feel. Because even if something bad happens to us, if we've chosen to have a loving and caring and generous approach or philosophy in life, and it's taken us a lifetime of learning to get there, when things do happen to us that are be considered by many as negative, we don't look at them and say, oh my, that's a learning experience, I can hardly wait. All we do is we step into it and we go, let's take an experimental attitude and see what happens this time. Because I've handled this stuff before, let's see what I can do with it this time. And instead of feeling apprehensive or angry or saying, oh geez, here it comes again, we step into it, we go, let's deal with it. Let's deal with what's here in the moment. That way I'm not projecting into the future and I'm not looking at the past, I'm looking at right now. And the moment we take ourselves into the present moment, everything else just straightens right out, because it's the only time we can be there. It's the only time we can be in any time in our life is right now. And I do like the Taoist philosophy about how living in the moment is so important. They talk about life as not polar opposites, but they talk about life as always being in motion. You know, but there is time between motion and action and inactivity. Example: you throw a ball up into the air, and you know, there's a certain point that impetus and that momentum stops the ball. It stops somewhere in midair, just for a millisecond, a microsecond, and bam, it comes down. You catch it, you do it again, and it holds for that second in your hand. So it's the will, it's the desire, it's the function of our conscious mind making that ball go up and down to create not only the activity but also the moment of neutrality in between. So It's that moment of neutrality that we try and find. That's the eternal moment, when it's in our hand or it's up in the air. But the motion and everything else is a natural part of the life process, because this is what evolution comes from. It's cyclical. It continues to evolve and continues to turn and to spin and create new and more interesting outcomes. But it's a matter of us to determine and to choose how we do want to feel about it and how we do want to deal with it. And if we feel angry or we feel oppressed, all of those things come from a place of victimization, in my understanding. And we become what I've called in the past the indignant victim.
Yes.
Where we're offended by everything in life and nothing's right, and you know, no matter what they do, and if only life was the way we like it to be, then it would be perfect, you know. And that's where victim stance gets us into being, you know, a control freak and getting stuck in that control place. Mm-hmm. And once we get stuck there, then we do feel like we're trapped in a little box and we're running around and we can't get out. So that all has to do with what we build up for ourselves in our lives and through the way that we, again, perceive things. So just having this kind of mental construct about how we perceive things, you know, has helped many people that I've worked with over the years just to say, you know, I kind of like that. You know, I kind of like the fact that life isn't like set in stone, that I can have choices, that in any moment I can stop thinking and acting in the way that I have been and go in a different direction, because we can't.
Right.
What's to stop us? Well, ourselves. And what stops us? Well, because we become comfortable where we are. But are we comfortable or are we mired? You know, if we're in a bad relationship or we're in a bad business situation or we're bad this or bad that, as we would perceive it, something that's being non-productive for us and is creating angst and pain for us, what do we do in that moment? Many people stay in it because they're afraid of trying something outside of the box. They're afraid of it. And then they talk to us and say, well, you know, life is a restricting place and we do have to, you know, deal with what is. And, you know, so they resign themselves to being unhappy and trapped,
right,
and feeling that they have nowhere to go and nothing to do. And, you know, oh, well, that's life. I'll just be philosophical about it. I'll just buy some extra life insurance so I can leave it to the kids, you know. So, you know, it's that kind of an attitude that does create a lot of pain and angst for many of us. And it creates a sense of hopelessness on a larger scale. And of course, a sense of no freedom.
Right.
You know, free will. So I think by beginning to step around that a little bit and realizing that it's all free will, that there is no such thing as not free will, that everything that we do in our lives is totally a matter of the things that our choices are involved.
Well, I think the problem is that when we think you know, with the law of attraction and how much emphasis it's received, I mean, people think that if they think positive thoughts, then everything around them is going to be positive, right? And so then they get caught up, and then they think, well, now I'm a failure because it's not working, and it never works. And then they get into that cycle that really has nothing to do with what it is that we're talking about. Like, it's the free will doesn't have to do with what happens in our lives or what happens in the world. It has more to do with the choices that we make about what happens. Then it's, you know, I mean, maybe we can't be extremely positive around the fact that, you know, finances are a huge problem and we're worried that we're going to get stuck on the street or whatever.
That's a projection, right?
Well, that's a projection, right, exactly. So that's a fear of what could happen in the future. But it's more a matter of just taking what is and being in the moment and then just making a choice about how you want to feel. It's not about what happens.
How do you do that? That's the big question.
Right. And I think, you know, it really is around, you know, being aware when we're in those situations, what we're doing, and then just allowing ourselves to, you know, it's not about what happens, because things happen. Things will happen. They happen in the world. They happen around us. They happen. And it's not a reflection of us. It's not a reflection of whether we're doing things right or doing things wrong. I mean, it just, it's just what happens. And it's really our opportunity to make a choice on how we perceive it.
Well, it's a matter of determining how we want to respond to something
right
off the bat. Okay. Now, you're talking earlier about positive thoughts. And the moment you say positive thoughts, well, then you think, okay, well, what's a positive thought? Well, positive thought for, you know, a trapper who has a big trap line is to catch a lot of muskrats today. A positive thought for a greenpeacer is to go and, you know, take all those traps and spring
right.
them, you know.
Right.
So we all have our own positive thoughts.
Right.
But the key word here is thought. It's what we think, okay? When we talk about love, and when we talk about expressing that emotion in everything that we do, not talk about the law of attraction. Well, it attracts me. It's positive. You know, positive thinking does it. Positive thinking doesn't do anything except attract other things that are similar to it. And we all have a different perception of what's positive, as we do of love. But true love, as I say, is something we can find inside of ourselves through a meditative process, and just to feel the love. And we feel it every day, true love. You know, when we see a child, we feel a love for them. You know, we don't fall in love with them, but we feel a love for them. We see, you know, for those of us who enjoy, you know, other species, we see other animals, and we love them. We have a sense of caring and joy. We love the world around us. We love a beautiful day. And that love goes into everything that we express, and it's a beautiful thing, and it is an emotion, and it's a choice in that moment, a thought to say, I am going to allow myself to love. I give myself permission to love, and in doing that, then the love goes into the things we do. Does it positive or negative? Love is always love.
Right.
You know? So I think people who sit there and try and like will and strain and make positive thoughts to have things come to them is great. It's a wonderful thing to do. And that's kind of what magic is based on, is to sit there and grunt and groan hard enough to make something work. Or else what we can do is let go of resistance. And instead of having a sense that we have to have a positive thought or a negative thought, we resist both of those thoughts, take an experimental attitude to the things that are happening around us, and see what the heck is going to happen next. You know, just by going with the flow and by jumping in and allowing ourselves to follow the current of life. And that way we again have this wonderful opportunity to become, you know, the person we really want to be and to live the life we really choose to live. Because most of us don't really want to live the life we're living.
Right.
You know, the ones who think that they want to live this way and wind up with, you know, the gigantic mansions in different parts of the world, once they get it all together, they go, holy mackerel, it costs a fortune to run these damn things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them downsize that for a few years. What was I thinking, you know? Because it was a whole job in itself, just owning the property. So, you know, I think that part of acquiring things, you know, we really have to think about what we do want, what we love in our lives, what's really important.
Right.
And I think to me, what's important is people, not things. I believe that while money is an important criteria in our lives, it is something that we all have access to. We all have access to because it is a power. It's a power that we give pieces of paper or coins or whatever the heck, or, you know, bits of metal, whatever we put some value to that's important to everybody. That money then becomes, you know, a criteria, but it's just power. It's just an energy, and we can choose to how as to how we want to have that energy. And, you know, a lot of people say, "Oh, I don't want to talk about money now. That's getting a little crazy." Because, you know,
that'll be a whole other topic.
A whole other topic itself. Well, you know, but the fact is, it's not a matter of loving or not loving money. It's a matter of loving yourself. And when the more you love yourself, the more you do the things that you want to do, the more you accomplish in life, you're automatically recompensated for it by the world and the universe around you, either people you work for or the people you work through, or in whatever way. It's so important to realize that. And to know that once we do let go of the old frozen thoughts of what we do and don't do what is and isn't right, then we can really step into our own power. And we don't have to worry about, you know, being in control or being out of control or anything else. And we can certainly let go of the thoughts about, do I have free will? Is this some human condition on earth? It's a mental condition. It's between our ears. I guess it's human because each one of us as human beings have the need to feel that sense of wholeness and expansion and freedom of consciousness. But it's up to us.
Perfect.
So I just like to finish by saying, you know, love yourself. Love what you do. Love each moment. And step into your own power by doing that. And you know, you do that in every moment and your life will take care of itself. And you will be able to follow yourself in whatever direction is best for you.
All right. You have been listening to News for the Heart. And we will be back with David next month. Take care.